The voice that robbed her of joy, of warmth, of anything but primal, basic fear. Her thighs protested at the path's steepness, but she sprinted up toward the gates, obeying Cassian's command, the roaring from the warrior and the monster echoing off the stones. Red light flashed behind her. The doors of the prison's cells rattled. Beasts screamed behind them, as if realizing one of them had gotten out, wanting out themselves. She clenched the harp in one hand, Cassian's siphon blazing in the other. She had to reach the gates, then make it down the mountain, and then holler for Rhysand and pray he had some sort of spell to sense his name on the wind. Then he'd have to race back up the mountain, down the path, and Cassian might be dead by the time she reached the gates so high above. He might be dying now. A cold bolt shot through her heart. She had run from him, left him. The harp warmed in her hand, humming. The gold gleamed as if molten. "We shall open doors and pathways. We shall move through space and eons together," it had sung during their unintentional scrying. "Our music will free us of earthly rules and borders." Open doors. She had opened a door with it, to Lanthus's cell, opened a door through its own power pressing on her. But to move through space? "The small strings are for games, light movement and leaping, but the longer, the final ones, such deep wonders and horrors we could strum into being." Nesta counted the strings, 26. She'd touched the first, the smallest, to free herself from the harp's power. But what did the others do? 26, 26, 26. Gwyn's voice floated from far away, recounting Merrill's earlier research on dimensions, the possibility of 26 dimensions. "We shall move through space and eons together. The small strings are for games, light movement and leaping." Could the harp? Nesta's breath caught in her throat. Could the harp transplant her from one place to another? Not only open a door, but create one she might walk through. "Free us of earthly rules and borders." She had to try it, for Cassian. Motion stirred in the gloom above. Rushing steps headed her way. Someone had entered the prison through the gates. Nesta angled Cassian's siphon toward the sound, bracing for whatever monster might come barreling down. Fey males in worn, dirty armor charged toward her, at least 10 Autumn Court soldiers. She knew who'd sent them, winnowing them on Kosche's power, who controlled them even from across the sea.
"I know where you are, Nesta Archeron."
And since Rhys had lowered the shields around the prison, they'd walked right in. Nesta didn't think. She seized that silver fire within her, let it wreathe her hands. "Take me to Cassian," she whispered, and plucked the first silver string of the harp. The world and oncoming soldiers vanished, and she had the sense of being thrown, even as she stood still, and she prayed and prayed. Metal flashed and red light flared, and there was Cassian, bleeding on the ground, siphons blazing, fighting the mist in front of him. There was nowhere to strike a fatal blow. The mist scattered at every thrust of Cassian's sword, and Lanthus shrieked at each one. But Lanthus could not be killed, only contained, Cassian had said. And the harp could open doorways, but not slay people. She ran for Cassian, finger readying on the harp's string to haul them out of there. But Cassian's eyes flared and he yelled, "Get!" The mist wrapped around his throat and hurled him. Her scream shattered through the tunnel as he hit the rock wall, wings crunching, and fell to the floor. He didn't move. A laugh like a knife scraping over stone filled the tunnel, and then Nesta was thrown too, slamming into the wall so hard her teeth clacked. and her head spun, breath whooshing from her as her fingers splayed on the harp before she hit the floor. But she'd landed near Cassian, and she hurried to turn him over, praying his neck hadn't snapped, that she hadn't doomed him by coming here. Cassian's chest rose and fell, and the mighty primal thing inside her body breathed a sigh of relief. Short-lived, as Lanthus laughed again.
You shall wish the blow killed him before I'm through with you both,
the creature said.
You shall wish you kept running.
But Nesta refused to hear another word, not as she knelt over Cassian, the only thing between him and Lanthus. She had been here before, had been in this exact position, his head on her lap, death laughing at them. Then she had curled over him and waited to die. Then she had stopped fighting. She would not fail this time. The mist pressed in, and she could have sworn she felt a hand reach for her. It was enough to set her moving. Drawing her sword in the same movement with which she shot to her feet, Nesta slashed a perfect combination. Lanthus screamed, and it was nothing like what she'd heard before. This was an ear-splitting sound of pure shock and fury. Nesta hefted Ataraxia, settling her weight between her feet, making sure her stance was even, unshakable. The blade began to glow, the mist contorted, shrinking and writhing as if it fought an invisible enemy. And then it became solid, blooming with color. A naked, golden-haired male stood before her. He was of average height, his golden skin sculpted with muscle, his sharp-boned face simmering with hate. Not a repulsive, awful creature, but one of beauty. His black eyes narrowed upon the blade as he hissed, "That is not Narbin." The name meant nothing to her. Nesta lunged, thrusting Ataraxia into eighth position. Lanthus leaped back. Cassian groaned, stirring to consciousness as she held the ground in front of her.
Which death god are you?
Lanthus demanded, glancing between the blade and her, the silver fire sizzling in her eyes. Nesta swung Ataraxia again, and Lanthus cringed away, afraid of the blade. That which could not be killed was afraid of her blade, not her, but Ataraxia, her made weapon. Get in your cell. Nesta advanced a step. Ataraxia pointed before her. Lanthus backed slowly toward his cell.
What is that blade?
His golden hair swayed down to his waist as he backed away again. Its name is Ataraxia, Nesta spat, and it shall be the last thing you see. Lanthus burst out laughing, the sound like a crow's cawing, hideous compared to his beautiful form.
You named a death sword Ataraxia?
He howled, and the very mountain shook. It shall slay you whether you like its name or not.
Oh, I do not think so.
Lanthus seethed.
I rode in the wild hunt before you were even a scrap of existence, witch from Urid. I summoned the hounds, and the world cowered at their baying. I galloped at the head of the hunt, and fey and beast bowed before us.
Nesta flipped Ataraxia in her hand, a movement she'd taken to doing with the Illyrian blades in idle moments during training. She'd seen Cassian do it often and found that it dispelled any extra energy. She hadn't realized it was such an effective intimidation technique. Lanthus shrank back. She prayed the Autumn Court soldiers coming down the path any moment would hesitate before the blade, too.
Knew they wouldn't, not with Briallen and the Crown controlling them. Which death god are you?
Lanthus asked again.
Who are you beneath that flesh?
I am nobody, she snapped.
Whose fire burns silver in your gaze?
You know whose fire, she stalled, but it struck true somehow. Lanthus's skin drained of color.
It is not possible.
He looked to the harp beside a stirring Cassian, and his eyes widened again.
We heard about you down here. You are the one the sea and the wind and the earth whispered of?
He shuddered.
Nesta?
He grinned, showing teeth slightly too long.
You took from the cauldron itself.
Lanthus halted his retreat and extended a broad, graceful hand.
You do not even know what you could do. Come, I shall show you.
He smiled again, with those two long teeth, turning his face from beauty to horror with a quirk of his lips.
Come with me, Queen of Queens, and we shall return what was once lost.
The words were a lullaby, a honeyed promise.
We shall rebuild to what we were before the golden legions of the Fae cast off their chains and overthrew us. We shall resurrect the wild hunt and ride rampant through the night. We shall build palaces of ice and flame, palaces of darkness and starlight. Magic shall flow untethered again.
Nesta could see the portrait Lanthus wove into the air around them. She saw herself on a black throne, a matching crown in her unbound hair. Enormous onyx beasts, scaled like those she'd seen on the hewn city's pillars, lay at the foot of the dais. Ataraxia leaned against her throne, and on her other side, Lanthus sat there, his hand laced through hers. Their kingdom was endless, their palace built of pure magic that lived and thrived around them. The harp sat behind them on an altar, the mask too. But the golden crown wasn't there. It rested atop Lanthus's head. And that was the snarled thread that pulled her out, the naked gleam of his greed. He'd seen the harp, known she was after the trove, and revealed what he'd do with it. The crown he'd claim for himself. It would have no influence over her, but their rule would be one of coercion, enslavement. A fourth object lay on the altar, veiled in shadow. But she could make out more than a gleam of the age-worn bone. The vision shifted, and they writhed on a great black bed, the golden skin of Lanthus's back shining as he moved inside her. Such pleasure. She had never known such pleasure with anyone. Only he could fuck her like this, driving so deep, her body warm and supple and wet for him, and soon his seed would take root in her womb, and the child she would bear him would rule entire universes. Another snarled thread that led outward, past the illusion. Her body was not his to touch, to fill with life, and she had known pleasure richer than what he'd shown her. Nesta blinked, then it was gone. Lanthus growled. Now he stood only as far away as her reach. Ataraxia's reach.
I can take care of that problem.
He snarled toward Cassian, and you will forget those ties soon enough. She hefted Ataraxia higher. Go back to your cell and shut the door.
I shall just escape again. Lanthus chuckled. And when I do, I will find you, Nestor Archeron, and you shall be my queen.
No, I don't think I will. Nesta let her power ripple down the blade. Ataraxia sang, blazing like the moon. Lanthus paled.
What are you doing?
Finishing the job. And his eyes were so fixed upon the glowing blade that he didn't spare a sideways glance to Cassian, did not see the dagger drawn, the one Cassian threw with impeccable aim. It embedded to the hilt in Lanthus's chest. Lanthus screamed, arching, and Nesta leaped. She sliced a 2-3 combination, slashing straight across, letting the power of her breath, her legs, and her core carry the blade through. Ataraxia sang the heart song of the wind as it whipped through the air. Lanthus's head and corpse fell in different directions, thumping on the stones. Strange black blood spurted from his form. And then Cassian was there, groaning as he wrapped a hand around hers again. "The harp," he panted, his face the portrait of pain. Blood leaked down his temple. "Pick it up, and let's go. We have to get out of here." "Can you even stand?" He swayed on his feet. He wouldn't make it 3 steps. "Yes," he grunted. To get her out of here, she knew he'd try. Just as she knew that Lanthus was dead, had it been the sword or her power? Since she'd made the sword, she supposed it technically counted as her power. But what could not be killed had been slain, somehow. A small part of her delighted in it, even as the rest of her trembled. Now, the scrape and thud of footsteps rushed toward them. "Autumn Court soldiers," she breathed, pointing to the dark path upward. "More of them. Briallen sent them to get the harp." "More!" Screaming began throughout the mountain, petrified, pleading, screaming, fists pounding, not on the rock or the doors that held them, but on the opposite walls of their cells, as if they were begging the prison to spare them from her and that sword. Lanthus had fallen. And the occupants of the prison had felt it. Even the footsteps of the Autumn Court soldiers seemed to slow at the sound. Nesta smiled darkly and picked up the harp. "We're not running out of here, and we leave the Autumn Court soldiers untouched, if only to prove Eris wrong. But Cassian's wounds? Yes, they needed to leave, quickly. Hold on to me," she commanded and whispered. "The front lawn of Feyre's house along the Sidra River in Velaris." Cassian barked a warning, but she plucked 3 strings this time. Only pulling one had carried her down here. So she supposed that 2 would take them perhaps a bit farther than that. And Velaris? Well, it seemed like it'd take 3 strings. She didn't want to know where all 26 strings might take her if strummed, or if someone made a melody. The world vanished. Again, she had the sensation of falling while standing still, and then sun and grass and a crisp autumn breeze, a massive, lovely estate behind them, the river before them, and not a trace of the prison or Lanthus. Nesta let go of Cassian as Rhysand burst out of the house's glass doors. He gaped at his friend. And when Nesta beheld Cassian in the daylight, blood trickled from his hair down his cheek. His lip was split. His arm hung at an odd angle. That was all Nesta saw before Cassian collapsed to the grass. Chapter 55. "It's a small cut. Stop fussing. Your skull was cracked and your arm was broken. You're grounded for a few days."
"You can't be serious."
"Oh, I most certainly am."
Nesta might have smiled at Cassian and Rhysand's standoff had she not agreed with the High Lord. Feyre stood beside her mate, concern tightening her features. Ataraxia still weighed heavy in Nesta's hand, the harp in the other. Her sister's eyes slid to her. Nesta swallowed, holding Feyre's gaze. She prayed that her sister could read the silent words on her face.
"I am sorry for what I said to you in Amran's apartment. I am truly sorry."
Feyre's eyes softened, and then to Nesta's shock, Feyre answered into her mind.
"Don't worry about it."
Nesta steeled herself, shaking off her surprise. She'd forgotten that her sister was, what was the word? Demati? able to mind speak as Rhys could. Nesta said, heart thundering, I spoke in anger, and I'm sorry. Feyre's pause was considerable. Then she said, the words like the first rays of dawn, I forgive you. Nesta tried not to sag. She intended to ask about the baby, but Rhys turned to her and said,
Put the harp on the desk, Nesta.
Nesta did, careful not to touch any of the 26 silver strings. It allowed you to winnow within and outside of the prison, Feyre said, peering at the harp. I suppose because it's made and exists beyond the rules of ordinary magic? She glanced to Rhys, who shrugged. Feyre's mouth pursed. If any of our enemies got their hands on this, they'd use it against us in a heartbeat. No wards around this house, the House of Wind, around any of our caches and hiding places would be safe. Not to mention that the harp seems to have a will of its own, a desire to stir up trouble. We can't plant it back in the prison, not now that it's been awakened. Rhys rubbed his jaw.
So we lock it up with the mask, warded and spelled so it can't act out again.
I'd keep them separate, Feyre advised. Remember what happened when the halves of the book were near each other? And why make it easier for an enemy to get both of them?
Good point,
Cassian said, wincing as if the words made his skull ache. Maja had healed the hairline fracture just above his temple, but he'd be in pain for a few days. And his broken arm was healed, but still delicate enough to require care. The sight of all the bandages was enough to make Nesta wish she could kill Ilanthus again. Rhys drummed his fingers on the desk, surveying the harp. Then he asked Nesta,
Beyond seeing Briallen, you said you also saw something when you first touched the harp.
Nesta had briefly explained it when they'd arrived. I think whoever used it last did something horrible with it. Maybe trapped the people who once lived on the prison's island in the walls somehow. Is that possible?
Doubt shone in Rhys's eyes.
Nesta asked, What is the Wild Hunt? She'd also told him of their encounter with Lanthus and the presence of the Autumn Court soldiers. Cassian had convinced Rhys not to engage with them, at least until they could deal with Briallen. When Rhys had raised his shield around the prison once more, they'd already vanished. Rhys blew out a breath, leaning back in his chair.
Honestly, I thought it mere myth. That Lanthus remembers such a thing. Well, there's always room for lying, I suppose, but on the off chance he was telling the truth, that'd make him more than 15,000 years old.
Feyre asked, So what is it, then? Rhys lifted a hand, and a book of legends from a shelf behind him floated to his fingers. He laid it upon the desk. He flipped it open to a page, revealing an image of a group of tall, strange-looking beings with crowns atop their heads.
The Fae were not the first masters of this world. According to our oldest legends, most now forgotten, we were created by beings who were near gods and monsters. The Daglan, they ruled for millennia and enslaved us and the humans. They were petty and cruel and drank the magic of the land like wine.
Rhys's eyes flicked to Ataraxia, then to Cassian.
Some strains of the mythology claim that one of the Fae heroes who rose up to overthrow them was Finn, who was given the great sword Gwydion by the High Priestess Oleana, who had dipped it into the cauldron itself. Finn and Gwydion overthrew the Daglan. A millennium of peace followed, and the lands were divided into rough territories that were the precursors to the courts. But at the end of those 1,000 years, they were at each other's throats, on the brink of war. His face tightened. Finn unified them
and set himself above them as High King, the first and only High King this land has ever had. Nesta could have sworn the last words were spoken with a sharp look toward Cassian, but Cassian only winked at Rhys. "What happened to the High King?" Feyre asked. Rhys ran a hand over a page of the book. "Finn was betrayed by his queen, who had been leader of her own territory, and by his dearest friend, who was his general. They killed him, taking some of his bloodline's most powerful and precious weapons. And then, out of the chaos that followed, the seven High Lords rose, and the courts have been in place ever since." Feyre asked, "Does Amran remember this?" Rhys only shook his head. "Only vaguely now. From what I've gleaned, she arrived during those years before Finn and Gwydion rose, and went to the prison during the Age of Legends, the time when this land was full of heroic figures who were keen to hunt down the last members of their former master's race. They feared Amran, believing her one of their enemies, and threw her into the prison. When she emerged again, she'd missed Finn's fall and the loss of Gwydion, and found the High Lord's ruling." Nesta considered all Lanthus had said. "And what is Narbin?"
Lanthus asked about it.
"He said my sword isn't Narbin. He sounded surprised." Rhys studied her blade.
"Narbin is a death sword. It's lost, possibly destroyed, but stories say it can slay even monsters like Lanthus."
"So can Nesta's sword, apparently," Feyre said, studying the blade as well.
"Beheading him with it killed him,"
Rhys mused. "A slice from it seemed to bind him into a physical form," Nesta corrected. "Cassian's dagger struck true only after Lanthus had been forced to give up his mist."
"Interesting," Rhys murmured.
Cassian said,
"You still haven't explained the wild hunt."
Rhys turned a few pages in the book to an illustration of a host of riders on horses and all manner of beasts. "The Daglin delighted in terrorizing the Fey and humans under their control. The wild hunt was a way to keep all of us in line. They'd gather a host of their fiercest, most merciless warriors and grant them free rein to kill as they pleased. The Daglin possessed mighty, monstrous beasts. Hounds, they used to call them, though they didn't look like the hounds we knew, that they used to run prey to ground before they tortured and killed them. It's a terrible history, and much of it might be elaborated myths."
"The hounds looked like the beasts in the Hewn City," Nesta said quietly. They all looked at her. She admitted, "Lanthus showed me a vision of what he and I might be together. We ruled in a palace, king and queen with the trove, and at our feet sat those hounds. They looked like the scaled beasts carved into the Hewn City's pillars." Even Rhys had no answer to that. Cassian's jaw tightened.
"So, even while he tried to kill you, he was trying to seduce you?"
Nesta's stomach churned, but she refrained from mentioning how graphic that vision had been. "There was a fourth object in the vision, but it was in shadow. Was there ever a fourth part of the trove? All I could make out was a bit of ancient bone." Rhys ran a hand through his dark hair.
"As far as history has confirmed, there are only three objects in the trove."
Feyre asked, "What if it's protected by a spell? Like the one to shield all thought of the trove, to keep people from ever knowing about the fourth object?"
Rhys's eyes shadowed. "Then the mother spare us, because even Amran only vaguely remembers a rumor of it."
The words hung there. Nesta asked, "So, now I go after the crown?"
"No,"
Cassian said, his pain-hazed eyes sharpening. Feyre nodded in agreement. Briallen knows we have the other two items. She sent those soldiers to get the harp. Cassian growled.
I thought Eris was being an asshole, but when I asked him about the 24 soldiers in Urid, he said there had been more in the unit that disappeared.
He rubbed his jaw.
I should have listened. Should have looked into it. Briallen had another 12 waiting to attack.
Self-loathing filled his face, and Nesta suppressed the urge to reach for his hand. Feyre countered.
Eris spews enough bullshit on a good day that anyone might miss an offhanded comment like that, Cass. At least we can now tell Eris where the rest of his soldiers are.
Nesta could have hugged her sister for the relief that bowed Cassian's shoulders upon hearing her words. For all his arrogance, the opinions of his friends, his family, mattered deeply. None of them would ever chide him for failure, but he'd punish himself for it.
Nesta brushed her fingers against Cassian's in silent understanding. His own curled against hers, meeting her stare as if to say,
"See? We're the same after all."
Feyre went on. If Briallen wants the mask and the harp badly enough that she acted so swiftly today, she'll keep coming to us, and we'll be waiting for her. A fierce light entered her eyes. Rhys frowned.
Even with just the crown, though, Briallen can do a great deal of damage. For all we know, Baron is under her control. As in thrall to her as Eris's soldiers are. We need to put an end to her and retrieve the crown before war truly erupts.
It's too risky, Feyre countered.
We pursued the cauldron in Highburn and it went badly.
Then we learn from our mistakes, Rhys challenged.
She'll have set a trap, Feyre said. We don't go after it. Silence fell before Rhysand said,
Then we need to secure wartime alliances again, and fast, and do some damage control on the ones we already have that might be strained.
Cassian arched a brow, worry shining in his eyes.
You sound as if you have an idea. Eris is coming to the winter solstice celebration at the Hewn City, Rhys said.
It was fast approaching. Nesta realized.
He's shaken by Tamlin catching you two meeting with him, and wondering if he'll balk from the alliance now that there's a slim chance Tamlin might reveal it. Or decide to sell him out first. We need to remind Eris of our continued commitment, and that he is important to us, that we have his back.
Cassian snarled with disgust. Feyre echoed the expression.
So buy him a present, Feyre said, waving a hand, and tell him we send all our love.
He'll want more than that,
Rhys said, mouth twitching, and his eyes fell upon Nesta.
Cassian straightened before Rhys could even speak.
You're not going to use her.
Feyre glanced between them, and after a second, as if her mate had spoken into her mind, she demanded, Really, Rhys? Rhys leaned back, and Nesta frowned, the only one of them apparently not aware of what this meant. Rhys said to her,
You don't have to do anything you don't wish to do.
But Elaine mentioned that you have particular skill on the dance floor.
Skill that once won you the hand of a duke in a single waltz.
She'd forgotten that night, the blur of jewels and silks, that duke's handsome face.
All she'd felt then was wild, savage triumph.
Over my dead fucking body, Cassian exploded. Nesta asked, You want me to dance with Eris?
Her heart began to pound, not entirely with fear.
I want you to seduce him, Rhys said. Not into bed, but to make him realize what he might attain once he understands that we have no plans to break this alliance. To weigh the benefits more strongly than the risks.
Nesta crossed her arms, ignoring Cassian's pointed glare, silently demanding that she dismiss this notion entirely. "You really think my dancing with Eris will solidify his loyalty?"
"I think Eris is our ally and will expect to dance with a lady of this court at the ball no matter what. I won't let Feyre within 5 feet of him. Moore might kill him, and Amryn is more likely to scare him off than win him over. So you and Elaine are the only options."
"Elaine doesn't go near him," Feyre said. "And you won't let me near him?"
Rhys threw her a charming smile.
"You know what I mean."
Feyre rolled her eyes. "You're becoming insufferable." She turned to Nesta. "Eris isn't, he's not good. He's not Baron-like, but he,
I know what he did to Morrigan," Nesta said. "Or rather, what he didn't do. Help her. When her family had brutalized her and dumped her over the Autumn Court border as punishment for ruining their marriage alliance. Eris had found her and then merely walked away.
I dealt with him the other day. I know what I'd be getting into with him."
"Moore," Rhys went on, "can teach you the dances. She had to learn all of them. And since she still presides over the Court of Nightmares, she's the best one to instruct you."
"Nesta hasn't agreed to anything," Cassian snapped. "Even one dance with that prick is too much."
"I'll do it," Nesta cut in, if only to spite him for being so territorial. She glanced to the sword still in her hand. "I just killed an immortal being. Eris is nothing. And if it will make him remember why he wants to be allied with us, make him think he might attain me if he holds up his end, then fine."
"He's already our ally," Cassian countered. "One dance is really going to secure his continued cooperation?"
"We need to show Eris that we respect and trust him," Feyre conceded with a defeated sigh. "Even if we don't. And letting him dance with one of our family is proof of that. At least for someone from the Autumn Court. If he winds up eating out of Nesta's hand, fantastic. If it just makes him remember that we're on his side, good. But these bonds have to be maintained."
"I don't like it,"
Cassian growled. "You don't have to like it," Feyre said, head lifting full of that high lady's authority. "You just have to watch from the sidelines and not look like you want to rip his head off." Nesta cut in. "Tell Morrigan I'll meet with her for dancing lessons whenever she's available." Feyre and Cassian, still bristling at each other, silently turned toward her. Nesta approached the desk, laying Ataraxia there. "Here," she said to Rhys. "You can take it back." Rhys said nothing, but Feyre's brows rose. "Why don't you keep it?" Cassian's curious stare seared her like a brand, but Nesta only said, "I have no interest in more death." Nesta inhaled through her nose for a count of six, held her breath for a few seconds, then exhaled through her mouth for another six beats. In the quiet of her bedroom that night, settled in the chair, she focused on her breath, nothing more. Any thoughts that came in, she acknowledged and let pass, even if some kept returning. She didn't care where they hid the harp. If they needed her blood to ward it as they had for the mask, they'd let her know. But the thought of what came next. "Breathe. Count." Nesta inhaled again, attention fixing on her expanding ribs, the feeling of the breath in her body. Even weeks into it, some days mind-stilling exercises were harder than others, but she kept at it, 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night. Nesta exhaled, counting, kept going. That was all she supposed she could do. Just keep going, one day, one breath at a time. She let that thought go too, breathed and breathed, and then stopped the counting altogether, let her mind wander. But her mind did not shoot in every direction. It remained calm, resting, content, right where it was. War had left the cottage untouched, but the harsh winters since Nesta had last seen it had not been so kind. Azriel had winnowed her and Cassian here after training, but hadn't lingered. Apparently, Gwyn had wanted him to go over dagger handling, so he'd left them with a promise to return in an hour. Nesta had no idea if an hour would be too much or too little. Had no idea why she'd asked Cassian to come here with her, really. But she'd gotten it into her head that she needed to visit, to see this place. The midday autumn sun made the disrepair all the more stark. The thatched roof that had molded or balded in spots, the overgrown weeds already turning brown before the winter, rising up to the small windows in the stone walls. Nesta's throat tightened, but she forced herself to walk toward the entry. Cassian remained silent behind her, footsteps so quiet he could have been the brisk wind through the two tall grasses. His head and arm had been fully healed by this morning, 2 days after Nesta had agreed to bewitch Eris. Cassian had even exercised alongside her earlier, though at a slower pace than usual. Like he was indeed heeding Rhys and Maja's warning to go easy. That he'd gone through the exercises without grimacing had caused some intrinsic part of her to sigh with relief, and dare ask him to join her today. She'd never have invited him along if he'd still been injured. Not that there was much of an enemy here to pose a threat. No humans wandered the leaf-strewn road beyond the cottage. Only a few birds chirped a half-hearted melody from the almost barren trees, muted, drab, and empty. That was how this land felt, even with autumn upon it, as if even the sun couldn't be bothered to shine properly here. Nesta's heart thundered as she laid a hand against the cold wooden door. Claw marks still gouged it.
Tamlin's handiwork, I take it?
Cassian asked behind her. Nesta shrugged, unable to find the words. She and Elaine had rehung the door after Tamlin had broken it. Their father, his leg wrecked beyond repair and unable to bear weight, had watched them, offering unhelpful advice. Her fingers curled into a fist and she shouldered the door open. Its rusted hinges objected, creaking, and a dusty, half-rotten scent swarmed her nose. Her cheeks heated. For Cassian to be here, to see this.
Just a brute, remember?
He stepped to her side.
I've lived in far worse. At least you had walls and a roof.
Nesta hadn't realized how much she needed to hear those words, and her shoulders loosened as she stepped into the cottage proper. In the chill dimness, broken only by rays of sunlight, she frowned at the ceiling. This house used to have a roof. The damage had let in all manner of creatures and weather. The former had made themselves comfortable, judging by the nests and various scattered droppings. Nesta's mouth turned dry. This horrible, awful, dark place. She couldn't stop her shaking. Cassian laid a hand on her shoulder.
Walk me through it.
She couldn't. Couldn't find the words. He pointed to a long work table. One leg had collapsed, and the whole thing lay at a slant.
You ate here?
She nodded. They had eaten here. Some meals in silence. Some with her and Elaine trying to fill the quiet with their idle chatter. Some with her and Feyre at each other's throats. like those last meals they'd had with her in this house. Nesta's stare drifted to the paint flaking off the walls, the intricate little designs. Cassian followed her stare. "Did Feyre paint that?" Nesta swallowed and managed to get out. "She painted every chance she got. Any extra coin she managed to save went toward paints."
"Have you ever seen what she's done to the cabin up in the mountains?"
"No, she'd never been there.
Feyre painted the whole thing, just like this. She told me once that there's a dresser here."
Nesta aimed for the bedroom.
"This one?"
Cassian followed her, and gods, it was so cramped and dark and smelly. The bed was still covered with its stained linens. The three of them had slept here for years. Cassian ran a hand over the painted dresser, marveling. She really did paint stars for herself before she knew Rhys was her mate, before she knew he existed.
His fingers traced the twining vines of flowers on the second drawer.
Elaine's drawer.
They drifted lower, curling over a lick of flame.
And yours.
Nesta managed a grunt of confirmation, her chest tight to the point of pain. There, in the corner, sat a pair of worn, half-rotted shoes. Her shoes. One of them was bursting at the toe's seam. She'd worn those shoes in public. Could still remember mud and stones creeping in. Her heart thundered, and she walked out of the room, back into the main space. She didn't mean to, but she looked toward the dark fireplace, toward the mantel. Her father's wood figurines lay atop it, thickly coated with dust and cobwebs. Some had been knocked over, presumably by whatever creatures now lived here. That familiar roaring filled her ears, and Nesta's steps thudded too loudly on the dusty floorboards as she approached the fireplace. A carving of a rearing bear, no bigger than her fist, sat in the center. Nesta's fingers shook as she picked it up and blew off the dust.
"He had some skill,"
Cassian said quietly.
"Not enough,"
Nesta said, setting the bear back onto the stone mantel.
She was going to bomb it.
No, she could master this, master herself, and face what lay before her. She inhaled through her nose, exhaled through her mouth, counted the breaths. Cassian stood beside her through all of it, not speaking, not touching, just there, should she need him. Her friend, whom she had asked to come here with her, not because he was sharing her bed, but because she wanted him here. His steadiness and kindness and understanding. She plucked another figurine from the mantel, a rose carved from a dark sort of wood. She held it in her palm, its solid weight surprising, and traced a finger over one of the petals. "He made this one for Elaine, since it was winter and she missed the flowers."
"Did he ever make any for you?"
"He knew better than to do that." She inhaled a shuddering breath, held it, released it, let her mind calm. "I think he would have if I'd given him the smallest bit of encouragement. But I never did. I was too angry."
"You'd had your life overturned. You were allowed to be angry."
"That's not what you told me the first time we met." She pivoted to find him arching a brow. "You told me I was a piece of shit for letting my younger sister go into the woods to hunt while I did nothing."
"I didn't say it like that."
The message was the same. She squared her shoulders, turning to the small broken cot in the shadows beyond the fireplace. "And you were right." He didn't reply as she strode to the cot. "My father slept here for years, letting us have the bedroom. That bed in there, I was born in that bed. My mother died in that bed. I hate that bed." She ran a hand over the cracking wood of the cot's frame. Splinters snagged at her fingertips. But I hate this cot even more. He'd drag it in front of the fire every night and curl up there, huddling under the blankets. I always thought he looked so weak, like a cowering animal. It enraged me.
Does it enrage you now?
A casual but careful question. It, her throat worked. I thought him sleeping here was a fitting punishment while we got the bed. It never occurred to me that he wanted us to have the bed, to keep warm and be as comfortable as we could, that we'd only be able to take a few items of furniture from our former home, and he'd chosen that bed as one of them, for our comfort, so we didn't have to sleep on cots or on the floor. She rubbed at her chest. I wouldn't even let him sleep in the bed when the debtors shattered his leg. I was so lost in my grief and rage and sorrow that I wanted him to feel a fraction of what I did. Her stomach churned. He squeezed her shoulder but said nothing.
He had to have known that,
she said hoarsely. He had to have known how awful I was, and yet he never yelled. That enraged me, too. And then he named a ship after me, sailed it into battle. I don't understand why.
You were his daughter.
And that's an explanation? She scanned his face, the sadness etched there. Sadness for her, for the ache in her chest and the stinging in her eyes.
Love is complicated.
She dropped his stare at that. She was a coward for avoiding his gaze, but she lifted her chin. I never once considered what it was like for him to go from this man who had made his own fortune, become known as the Prince of Merchants, and then lose everything. I don't think losing my mother broke him the same way as losing his fleet. He'd been so sure the venture would gain him even more wealth, an obscene amount of wealth. People told him he was mad, but he refused to listen. When they were proved right, I think that humiliation broke him as much as the financial loss. She studied the calluses already building across her fingers and palms. The debtors seemed gleeful when they came here, like they'd resented him all this time and were more than happy to take it out on his leg. I spent the entire time more terrified for what they'd do to me and Elaine. Feyre, she tried to get them to stop, stayed here with him while we hid in the bedroom. She made herself meet Cassian's gaze again. I didn't just fail Feyre by letting her go into the woods. There were plenty of other times.
Have you ever told her this?
Nesta snorted. No, I don't know how. He studied her, and she resisted the urge to squirm under the scrutiny.
You'll learn how, when you're ready.
How very wise of you. Cassian sketched a bow. Despite this house, the history all around her, Nesta smiled. She pocketed the carved rose. I've seen enough. He arched a brow.
Really?
She clenched the wooden rose in her pocket. I think I just needed to see this place one last time, to know we got out, that there's nothing left here except dust and bad memories. He slid an arm around her waist as they walked for the door, again surveying all the little paintings Feyre had squeezed into the cottage.
Az won't be back for a little while. Let's go flying.
What about the humans?
They'd run screaming in terror.
Cassian gave her a wicked smile, opening that half-broken door for her, leading her into the sunlight and clean air.
It'll add a little spice to their days.
Chapter 56.
A month passed, and winter crept upon Valaris like hoarfrost over a window pane. Morning training became a chilled affair, their breath clouding the frosted air as they worked with swords and knives, the metal so cold it bit into their palms. Even their shields sometimes became crusted with frost. Valkyries learned to fight in all kinds of weather, Gwyn told them, especially the cold. So when snow fell occasionally, Nesta and the others trained too. Nesta had to switch into another size of leathers, and when she looked in the mirror each morning to braid her hair, the face that stared back had lost its gauntness, the shadows beneath the eyes. Even with Cassian fucking her on every surface of the house, sometimes until the early hours of the morning, the exhaustion, the purple bruises under her eyes, had vanished. She told herself it didn't matter that he never stayed in her bed afterward to hold her. She wondered when he'd grow tired of it, of her. Surely he'd get bored and move on, even if he feasted on her each night as if he were starving, gripped her thighs in his powerful hands, and licked and suckled at her until she writhed. Sometimes she straddled his face, hands clenching the headboard, and rode his tongue until she came on it. Sometimes it was her tongue on him, around him, and she swallowed down every drop he spilled into her mouth. Sometimes he spilled on her chest, her stomach, her back. And she came at the first splash of him on her skin. She couldn't imagine tiring of him. Having him over and over only made her need grow. She'd been practicing dances with Morrigan in the house study twice a week, the two of them barely swapping more than a few words as Nesta learned waltz after waltz, some particular to the Hewn City, others to the Autumn Court, others to the Fae in general. Rhys had given them the Veritas Orb, so Morrigan might share with Nesta her memories of the dances and the music that accompanied them. Nesta had watched the steps, the balls and parties that were sometimes full of light, and others that had darkness and sorrow around the edges. Morrigan had offered no explanation beyond comments about a dancer's technique. The music, though, it was brilliant, so full of life and motion that she always found herself wishing she had another hour or two of lessons just to hear it again and again and again. No one ever showed up to watch them, not even Cassian. If Morrigan reported on their progress, she never let on. Now, with winter solstice 3 days away, Morrigan was wrapping up her lessons as snow drifted past the wall of windows. She asked Nesta suddenly, "What are you wearing to the ball anyway?" Nesta, leaning against the work table to catch her breath and listening to the strains of the violin through the Veritas Orb's shimmering mirage, shrugged. "One of my dresses." "Oh, no." Sweat beaded on Morrigan's brow, and her braided golden hair curled slightly with the moisture. "Eris," she searched for the words. "He's all about appearances. You have to wear the right thing." Nesta considered what Morrigan usually wore and frowned. "I can't wear something that revealing." Both Morrigan and Feyre opted for less is more when it came to their Hewn City attire. Nesta had no issues with nudity before her bedroom partners, but in public? The human had not been ripped from her entirely. "I'll look around." Morrigan pushed off the windowsill. "See what we have." "Thank you, Morrigan." It was the first normal conversation they'd had, the first time Nesta had even uttered those words to Morrigan, ever said her name. Morrigan blinked, realizing it too. "It's just more, you know. Amryn is the only person in this court who calls me Morrigan, and that's because she's a cranky old bastard." Nesta's lips twitched upward. "Very well, then," she added, trying it out. "More." The clock chimed one, and Nesta began walking out the door, leaving the orb and its soaring music where it lay on the desk. I need to head to the library. She was already going to be late, but the music had been so enthralling she hadn't wanted to stop.
So do I, actually, Morgan, said, and they fell into step in the hall.
The work I'm doing for Rhys and Feyre and Balahan requires some research, and Clotho has been looking into it for me.
Ah.
Stilted silence fell as they strode down the stairs, then into another hall. The towering doors to the library appeared before Nesta asked, "Does it bother you that I'll be dancing with Eris?"
Moore considered.
"No, because I know you're going to make him crawl before the end of it."
It wasn't a compliment, not really.
They found Clotho at her usual desk. She rose, greeting Moore with an embrace that left Nesta speechless.
"My old friend," Moore said, her face lit with warmth.
The face she showed everyone in this court, except for Nesta, and those in the Hewn City.
Shame tightened Nesta's gut, but she said nothing as Clotho's enchanted pen and paper wrote, "You look well, Moore."
"Eh." Moore lifted a shoulder.
"Nesta's been running me ragged with dancing lessons, but I've been fine."
"I found the books you requested." Clotho placed a crooked hand atop a pile of books on her desk. Nesta took that as her cue to leave and nodded to the females as they fell into a discussion about the material. Gwyn was waiting, a level below, watching them, with Emery in the stacks behind her.
"What are you doing here?"
Nesta asked Emery. She'd still been in the training ring when Nesta had hurried off to her dancing lesson, but that had been hours ago.
"I wanted to see where you two work," Emery said, eyes upon Clotho and Moore a level above.
She sighed, nodding toward Moore.
"I always forget how beautiful she is. She never comes to Windhaven these days." Nesta could have sworn pink stole over Emery's brown cheeks. Indeed, in the library's deep gloom, Moore shone like a ray of sunshine. Even the darkness at its bottom seemed to slither away.
"I was showing Emery the wonders of Merrill's office while she's off at a meeting," Gwyn said. "I've got to go to work, but I thought you could bring her around while you shelve."
Gwyn threw her a wry glance. "And dance?" Nesta rolled her eyes. She might have been caught practicing her waltzes in the stacks once or twice.
Or 10 times.
Nesta nodded to Emery, drawing the female's gaze away from Moore's animated hand gestures.
"Come on."
But Gwyn said, "Actually, before you two go, I wanted to give you something, since it's probably the last time we'll see each other until winter solstice is over."
Nesta and Emery swapped confused looks. The latter asked,
"You got us presents?"
Gwyn only said,
"I'll meet you down at your cart."
With that, she dashed into the gloom. Emery and Nesta aimed for level 5, where Nesta had left her cart. It had been replenished with books needing to be shelved. She explained what she did, but Emery seemed to be half listening. Her face had gone pale.
"What?"
Nesta asked. Emery's brows bunched.
I must not have drunk enough water during training. They'd tried out 2 new Valkyrie techniques that Gwyn had found the night before, and both had been particularly brutal, ordering them to use shields as springboards for launching a fellow Valkyrie into the skies, and to do their abdominal curls, bearing the weights of those shields. No one had managed to cut the ribbon, though Emery had nicked an edge 2 days ago.
"What's wrong?"
Nesta pressed. Emery's eyes turned bleak.
I swear, I can hear my father yelling down here."
Her hands trembled as she lifted one to brush a strand of hair behind her ear.
"I can hear him screaming at me. I can hear the furniture breaking."
Nesta's blood went cold. She whipped her head to the downward slope to their right. No darkness lurked there, but they were low enough.
This place is ancient and strange, she said, even as she processed what Emery had admitted. She'd never spoken of her father beyond the wing clipping, but Nesta had gathered enough. The man had been a beast, like Thomas Mandray's father.
Let's go up a level, where the darkness doesn't whisper so loudly. I'm sure Gwyn will find us easily enough.
She linked her arm through Emery's, pressing her body close, letting some of her warmth leak into her friend. Emery nodded, though she remained wan. Nesta wondered if Emery heard her father's bellowing every step of the way. Gwyn did find them, the priestess panting and flushed as she handed out two rectangular parcels, each roughly the size of a large, thin book.
One for each of you.
Nesta opened the brown paper and beheld a stack of pages filled with writing. At the top of the first page, it merely said, Chapter 21. She read the first few lines beneath it, and then nearly dropped the pages.
This is about us,
Gwyn beamed.
I convinced Meryl to add us into the penultimate chapter. She even let me write it, with her own annotations, of course. But it's about the rebirth of the Valkyries, about what we're doing.
Nesta had no words. Emery's hands were once more shaking as she leafed through the pages.
You had this much to say about us?
Emery said, choking on a laugh. Gwyn rubbed her hands together.
With more to come.
Nesta read a line at random on the fifth page. Whether the sun beat hot on their brows or freezing rain turned their bones to ice, Nesta, Emery, and Gwyneth arrived at practice each morning, ready to... The back of her throat ached, her eyes stung.
We're in a book.
Gwyn's fingers slid into hers, squeezing tight. Nesta looked up to find her holding Emery's free hand as well. Gwyn smiled again, her eyes bright.
Our stories are worth telling.
Nesta was still reeling from the generosity of Gwyn's gift that evening when she found a note from Cassian telling her he needed to stay overnight in one of the Illyrian outposts to deal with some petty squabble between war bands. With the blood rite mere months away, he'd said tensions were always high, but this year seemed particularly bad. New feuds popping up every few days, old grudges resurfacing. Nesta, despite the note's contents, had smiled to herself, picturing Cassian's take-no-bullshit face as he laid down the law. But her amusement had soon faded, and though she tried mind-stilling twice after dinner, she couldn't get herself to settle. Kept thinking of Gwyn's gift, of Emery's terrified face as she sensed whatever was in the darkness. Sitting at her desk, staring at nothing, Nesta cupped her forehead in her palm. A mug of hot chocolate appeared beside her, along with a handful of shortbread. Nesta chuckled. Thank you. She sipped from her drink, nearly sighing at the richness of the cocoa.
I'd like to try a fire, she said quietly. A small one.
Instantly, the house had a tiny blaze going in the fireplace. A log popped, and Nesta straightened, stomach twisting. It was a fire, not her father's neck. Her gaze shifted to the carved wooden rose she'd placed on the mantel, half hidden in the shadows beside a figurine of a supple-bodied female, her upraised arms clasping a full moon between them. Some sort of primal goddess, perhaps even the mother herself. Nesta hadn't let herself dwell on why she'd felt the need to set the rose there, why she hadn't just thrown it in a drawer. Another log cracked, and Nesta flinched, but she remained sitting there, staring at that carved rose. Would she live the rest of her life like Emery?
always glancing over a shoulder for a shadow of the past to haunt her? Did she appear as Emery had this afternoon, terrified and pained? She owed herself more than that. Emery, too, deserved more, a chance to live a life without fear and dread. So, Nesta could try, right now. She'd face this fire. Another log cracked. Nesta ground her teeth. Breathe. Inhale for 6. Hold. Exhale for 6. She did just that. This is a fire. It reminds you of your father, of something horrible happening, but this is not him. And while you are feeling uncomfortable, you can get through it. Nesta focused on her breathing, made herself unclench each of her 2 tight muscles, starting with her face and working all the way down to her toes. All while she told herself over and over, "This is a fire. It makes you uncomfortable. This is why you react as you do. You can breathe through this. Work through this."